I'd like to thank today's sponsor, Podcorn, for sponsoring this episode. Check out sponsorship opportunities and start monetizing your podcast today by signing up at podcorn.com/podcasters. Podcorn is an easy way to monetize your podcast. For me, it was a no-brainer. You see, Podcorn makes it super easy to work with sponsors. They have a marketplace that allows you to interact with potential sponsors, which is super intuitive to use. I've been working with Podcorn for about 6 months now, and I've already had 5 different show sponsors. With Podcorn, there's no middleman, and doesn't matter how big your podcast is, I'm able to set my own rates and work directly with sponsors. The best part is, you don't lose any of the rights to your show, and Podcorn supports you the entire time. With the marketplace, you have access to brands, and Podcorn provides transparency, creative freedom, and full control of how and when you have ads in your show. Click the link in my show notes to sign up for Podcorn. True Consequences is a proud member of the Borealis Podcasters Guild.
The Oracle Network. The Oracle Network. Look deeper.
True Consequences is a true crime and mystery podcast with stories based in New Mexico and the American Desert Southwest. I'm your host, Eric Carter Bondine. For those of you just joining, Sarah Turney's having some technical issues getting in here, and so now you're stuck with just me, so I apologize for that. Oh, the day before your birthday. Awesome, Laura. How did I get started? Okay. I got started with basically, we'll start with the story of my brother. So when I was 6 years old, my brother was brutally murdered by my mom's then boyfriend. Thank you, Susie. My brother was only 9 months old, and his name was Jacob Jeremiah Landine. And my mom's boyfriend at the time had been abusing him for a while, and we didn't really know what was happening. What happened was he kind of came into our lives when my mom was at a low point. My dad was having an emotional affair, and he kind of swooped in and started love bombing us, which for those of you who know what that is, he was showering us with affection and attention and things that we were looking for in that moment. And within a matter of a couple of months, weird things started happening to my brother. There started to be random bruises on his body. He had a brain injury that was so severe, they had to lance it and drain the brain fluid. And my mom's boyfriend at the time blamed me as a 5-year-old and said that I was jealous of my brother and that I was hurting him. So my mom wasn't really sure what was happening and sent me to California to live with my dad. And so while I was in California, you know, I started a new kindergarten, living in a new town, in a new state. And within a matter of a month, I'm sorry, Courtney, I should have said a trigger warning for you folks. This does involve child abuse and domestic violence as well. But I kind of just had to jump right in here. So within a matter of a month, my brother was injured so severely. So Sarah, I'll let you come in. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I'm so sorry. Can you hear me?
That's okay. Yeah.
Okay. I don't have my microphone. I think that might have been the problem. But please, continue. This is your time to talk about Jacob.
Thank you so much, Sarah, for this. So my mom had started limiting her boyfriend's contact with my brother after she sent me to California because she was suspecting that he was responsible for a lot of the things that were happening to him. I guess one of the main reasons was that as soon as I was gone, all of these things continued to happen. You know, there were sunflower seed shells in my brother's crib. My grandmother everybody used to play with Jacob kind of rough because he liked that. He was a daredevil. He was a crazy kid. And so she picked him up over her head one day and he started freaking out and he was clawing at her hair and screaming. And that was way out of character for him. And I'd already been in California at this point. So my mom confronted her boyfriend and said, you know, what are you doing to Jacob? Why is he acting this way? He's never been like this. He said, I don't know what you're talking about. So she picks up Jacob and he does the same thing. He's just like clawing onto her hair, screaming and crying. And so one night, my grandma is taking care of Jacob and she calls my mom at work and says, hey, I really want to go to church tonight. What do I do with Jacob? My mom said, you know what? I get off in an hour. Why don't you take him to my boyfriend's house? I'm sure everything will be fine. What's the worst that could happen in an hour? So immediately after that, she started panicking and she was working in the grocery store. She begged her boss to let her go home and he wouldn't let her. He told her that it was too busy. So she just tried to work through it, work through that anxiety and all the fear that she was having. And probably about half an hour after my brother was dropped off, her boyfriend runs into the grocery store where she's working and he's panicking. An ambulance is going by on the road at high speeds and my brother's being rushed to the hospital. He was airlifted. I lived in a small town in New Mexico called Socorro. He was airlifted to Albuquerque to the trauma center and rushed into emergency surgery. He had a subdural hematoma caused by blunt force trauma, and he didn't make it out of surgery.
You're amazing. No, I got choked up too. Trust me. You're doing great.
So a lot of things have happened with this case. I need to say that this was 33 years ago. So that'll give you an idea of how old I am. I actually just turned 40 yesterday. But my father and I flew back to New Mexico and I was interrogated by the police. I was asked if I was jealous of my brother, if I hurt him. And to be honest with you, I don't remember being jealous of him. I don't remember hitting him. I don't remember kicking him. I don't think that a five-year-old has the strength to cause a baby's head to start leaking brain fluid. I don't think I had the force to be able to do that. And then, you know, follow that up with the fact that after I was gone, now Jacob's dead, right? So a lot of things happened. My mom was investigated. Her boyfriend was investigated. And I'm not very clear on how all of this shook out, but basically there's a few things in the case that are alarming to me. And the first thing is, a lot of this stuff I learned later. So essentially, the DA refused to prosecute in the beginning. And then my mom, he convinced her that, you know, it wasn't his fault and that it was an accident and whatever. And she believed him and they got married. And that's when our life turned to hell. And I'm not going to get into that in depth now. If you want to know more, you can listen to my interview with my mom. We talk about that in depth. But he became very abusive towards my mother and towards me and would say things to her like, the only way you're leaving me is in a body bag. And so eventually there was a situation where he was grooming my 14-year-old cousin to sexually abuse her. And he would tell her things like, you know, you can't say anything about this. Nobody's going to understand. It's just our secret. You know, typical pedophile gross stuff that happens. But my cousin really didn't care about anything. She's a loud mouth. So, you know, he's like, you can't tell anybody. She told everybody, like anybody who would listen to her, she was telling them. And, that was the straw that broke the camel's back for my mom, which was the impetus for her to leave him. And because the abuse was so severe against her, the judge granted her an annulment on the marriage and an order of protection for life. So my mom goes to the DA after she left this jerk, and I'm not saying his name because he hasn't been charged yet. And the DA told her that he wasn't going to prosecute because she changed her story. So let's talk about that for a second. And then Sarah, if you have any questions, you know, feel free to jump in. So when my mom was initially interviewed, they asked her, do you think that he's capable of doing this to your son? And she said, I don't think so. So fast forward to 1991, when she has an annulment, we have an order of protection against him. The DA says, no, you're just a woman scorned and you changed your story. The story being that she didn't think he was capable of this.
It's so crazy. Like, of course she didn't think he was capable of that, or else she wouldn't have left Jacob with him. Like, that's what blows my right. mind. Of course she didn't think he was capable of that.
Right. And that's not a story, right? And the DA even said that that was an alibi, that she had alibied him by saying she didn't think he was capable of it, which that's not an alibi.
No, it's not. And I don't want to cut you off on your train of thought, but can we talk about the confessions?
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, so this is where things get a little weird. So in 2005, my mom and I requested that a cold case investigator with state police reopen the case and look at it and see if it was viable to try. And so this guy was amazing. He did an incredible job looking into this. And there's a lot of problems with this case. So first of all, my mom's ex-boyfriend had four different accounts of what happened to Jacob. And I won't get into all of those now, but essentially they were all different. None of them really matched up. The only consistency in his stories was that he was dubbing cassette tapes that day. So I believe that that probably is true. However, the four stories that he gave, they all pointed to sharp force trauma. Jacob's injuries were caused by blunt force trauma. So in the investigation, reading the police reports, the cold case investigator found out that they were planning on administering a polygraph test to him on that same day when Jacob died. And somewhere in the notes, it says, you know, ex detective came into the sergeant's office and said that a polygraph would not be necessary in as much as the suspect confessed. The cold case investigator could not find a transcript of the confession. There is no recording of the confession. There's not even any notes that say what he actually confessed to.
That drives me absolutely insane.
Yeah. But we know he confessed. To what? I don't know. Probably, I'm guessing, negligent cause homicide. Right. Because I wouldn't see him confessing to intentionally cause homicide. So then he eventually did take a polygraph after Jacob's funeral. We went up with him, and I say up because we were driving north to Santa Fe, and that's how we talk in New Mexico. We go up to Santa Fe and down to Las Cruces, just in case you're wondering. So we went to Santa Fe, and he was in there for a few hours, came out. My mom said, how'd it go? He said, everything's fine. I passed. Well, fast forward to 2005, he did not pass. He actually failed the polygraph. So we have a confession. We have a failed polygraph examination. We have the ME report indicating that it was, you know, severe trauma, probably caused by the open hand of an adult man, is what the ME said. All of these things are here, yet the DA refuses to prosecute. So 2005, the cold case investigator sends the case to the new DA and says, hey, here's this case. I think it's a winnable case. I think it's very clear what happened. And the DA said, no, sorry. There's a statute of limitations.
On murder. There's a statute of limitations on murder.
There was in New Mexico in the 80s, there was a statute of limitations on murder. But that was removed. And then there was a Supreme Court case that happened. I just learned about this that happened a couple of years ago that made every murder proactively absolved of that statute of limitations. So it's gone now.
So I was like, there's no way in 2020 there's no way.
Yeah. The whole case is a mess. I agree with you, Emily. The investigation was a mess. Everything is insane. Good question, Courtney. So yeah, my mom has asked me not to call him my stepfather because she feels like he's not deserving of that title. So I have to say her boyfriend at the time, her ex-boyfriend, he was an employee for the county He had keys to every single county office. He played basketball with the city police every weekend. And he was friends with the DA. Yeah. He had a lot of ties to law enforcement and officials.
It's so scary and so crazy that things like this can happen, that it can seem so obvious. Because if I remember correctly, and forgive me, I don't have everything right in front of me, the employees at the hospital were like, this is clearly abuse. This is clearly an abuse case. There are past, there's past indications of abuse, and here is fresh, brand new abuse. And I believe that he said, oh, well, you know, Jacob fell off the couch, which if every child that fell off the couch had to go to the hospital, the hospitals would be filled with children. So it just kills me that there's right. so many officials, you know, these people at the hospital saying this is clearly abuse, and everybody just turned a blind eye.
Yeah, and there was an investigation with Child Protective Services. This was the most frustrating thing to me, was prior to Jacob's death, a neighbor called that she suspected that there was abuse happening in the home. And so in my mind, for a neighbor to be aware of that, it must have been really loud.
Yeah, especially for a baby who can't speak and talk about that abuse. My goodness.
Yeah. So here's what happened. The investigator shows up. He yells at the investigator and she leaves.
I can't.
And nothing ever happened.
There's too many cases like that where Child Protective Services comes into the picture, doesn't do a whole lot, and just leaves. Like, and I understand that there's constraints and that, you know, they are very much trying to keep these families together, but it's just so sad to see so many people slip through the cracks. Of course, it happened in Alyssa's case and with Jacob's case too. It's so hard because people are trying to do the right thing, right? You see something, so you say something, and nothing's being done. Like, what more can these people do?
Yeah, Rebecca, you're right. So the doctor at the time that was treating Jacob when he passed away said he documented that my mom's boyfriend was only concerned about himself. He kept saying, this isn't going to look good for me. I can't believe this is happening to me. Why is this happening to me? Things like that over and over again. Never once did he ask, is Jacob okay? Is Jacob going to make it? There was not a single, you know, any concern for Jacob. It was all about him.
It's so gross. It's so gross. Susie is asking a very important question. How do we help?
Okay. There's a lot of things that are happening now that I can't talk about, but I have requested the Attorney General look into the case. So I have a petition for that, but the Attorney General has already started talking to me. So I think the biggest thing I need right now is getting Jacob's story out there. That's where I am somewhat stuck. And that's the most important thing right now, is making people aware of what's happening. And so, you know, for me with this podcast, Jacob's death was a guidepost in my life and in the state of New Mexico in the way that I frame things. And what I mean by that is that 33 years ago, Jacob was murdered as a result of child abuse, and nothing happened. Well, here we are now. This continues to happen over and over and over again in the state of New Mexico. There are so many kids who are abused and forgotten, and I want to tell all of their stories. And so if you can help me get Jacob's story out there, that would be worth way more than you can imagine at this point, because for so long, the prosecutors have hidden behind the statute of limitations. They've hidden behind the idea that the case may not be winnable for them. So politically, it doesn't make sense to prosecute it. And I don't want them to be able to hide anymore. I want this out there so that everybody knows what's happening, so that they have nowhere to turn except for the right way.
Absolutely. I mean, let's not pretend that media exposure doesn't put pressure on these people. It absolutely does. They don't want to look stupid. They don't want to look incompetent. They don't want to look like they don't care, but nobody knows if nobody's talking about it. Like that media pressure, I think, is worth a lot in this case.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't want Jacob to be forgotten.
Yeah, of course. And he won't be. Eric, we're going to make sure that he's not. He absolutely won't be forgotten. Between us here at CrimeCon, I will personally ensure, Eric, that he won't be forgotten. And you know that. You know that I would do absolutely anything for you and for Jacob. And I promise he won't be forgotten. And I am pretty sure all these wonderful people in here right now will make sure of that as well. So let me speak for Eric while he's a little choked up, but please go follow his podcast at True Consequences. He has three amazing episodes that talk about his brother, Jacob. I cannot tell you the emotions I felt when I was listening to your interview with your mom, Eric. I'm literally getting choked up right now. It was so emotional and wonderful. And I know that you had to stop it at one point because it was getting so emotional, but to have her on your side like that and to be so raw and open was amazing. And I think you already know that I'm your mom's biggest fan. Like, I will never stop standing your mom. But yeah, you guys need to go listen to those three episodes. They're absolutely amazing. And it goes into so much depth and detail and like Voices for Justice, you go very much with experts and real witness testimony, and you go off paperwork, and I respect you so much for that. And just know that we're never going to forget.
Thank you. That means so much to me.
Of course. Well, and where can everybody find you? Like, I know he's on TikTok, you guys. So don't overlook TikTok. Go follow his TikTok.
Yeah. I feel like such a grandpa on TikTok.
Everybody over the age of 21 feels like an old person on TikTok. Don't worry.
Yeah, I'm on TikTok. I'm on social media. I'm on Twitter at TrueConsPod, Facebook and Instagram at TrueConsequencesPod. I have a website, trueconsequences.com, and my podcast is in every podcast player that you can find. And if it isn't, let me know and I'll add it to there, because I'm trying to get this out as much as I can. I'm also on YouTube. But you can find me anywhere you get your podcasts.
Oh, that's amazing. I don't want to cut you off. Is there anything else that you'd like to say to everybody?
You know, first of all, I want to say thank you to you, Sarah. You've been a godsend to me and my mom, and we're both so grateful for you and for your help with raising awareness about Jacob's case. I want to thank everybody who was here to listen and ask questions. If you had a question that you didn't, you know, get answered while we were talking, email me, eric@trueconsequences.com. DM me on whatever social media. I will respond. I'm like Sarah, you know, I'll respond to you. I'm happy to answer any questions that I can.
You are amazing. And if for whatever reason you guys forget and you follow me and don't follow Eric, just tag me and I will tell you where to find him again, because he is amazing. But yeah, I'm sorry that we're out of time, and I'm sorry that because of me it was cut off so much. But just so you guys know, Eric will be back on my podcast for a full-blown episode that can actually do this story justice outside of this 30-minute window. So please stay tuned for that, because you are not done hearing me talk about Jacob's story, and I probably never will be.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, thank you,
thanks,
everybody.
Thanks, guys. Have fun.
Thanks for listening to True Consequences. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at True Consequences Pod, and on Twitter at True Cons Pod. True Consequences is listener supported. If you'd like to support this one-man show, please go to patreon.com/True Consequences. Thanks for listening, and stay safe, New Mexico.